So let's switch to middle length lumbering, page 145. Explanation of how to train the mind through equalizing and exchanging oneself with others, oneself and others. So think about the advantages of exchanging and disadvantages. Advantages of exchanging and disadvantages, not exchanging oneself and others, demonstrating that you can generate this mind if you familiarize yourself with it, and the stages of meditation, how to exchange oneself with and others. First, there's 3 points. In engaging the in both good sattva conduct, it says whoever wishes to protect himself and others rapidly should practice the secret instructions, which consist in exchanging oneself and others. And then there is the advantages of exchanging and disadvantages of not exchanging oneself and others. All happiness that exists in the world arises from wanting others to be happy. All suffering in the world arises from wanting one's own happiness. What need is there to say any more, the childish work for their own welfare, the munis, the Buddha sage, for the welfare of others. Look at the difference between the two. And therefore, the Buddhahood, so forth, and so forth, are difficult to attain if one does not exchange oneself and others, one's happiness and suffering of others. If one fails to exchange them correctly, one will not reach Buddhahood. Samsara will also be without happiness. Just as it is expressed here, you should think of cherishing oneself as the door of all problems, cherishing others as the basis of all excellences, and demonstrating that you can generate this mind if you familiarize yourself with it. This has 2 parts. The actual topic, in the same way that fear used to arise in you, even at hearing your enemy's name, but later on, having made it up, you became friends and got very sad if he was absent. Likewise, due to the mind following habits, you can familiarize yourself with seeing yourself like someone else and others like yourself. In the same text, it says, do not avoid things because they're difficult. By the strength of familiarization, one whose name was frightful to hear will make you sad if he is away. It is not all that hard to posit my body as belonging to others. Clearing up doubt, if you think, since someone else's body is not my own body, how could it be appropriate to generate the same attitude of mine towards others? This body was also created from the semen and blood of our parents, and even though it was created from parts of others' body, we hold it to be I. By the power of previous familiarization, therefore, likewise, if you familiarize yourselves with cherishing others' body as if they were our own, this mind will arise. The same text says, therefore, with regard to drops of someone else's blood and semen, you apprehend yourself. Like that, get used to it regarding others. And then the stages of meditation, though thorough reflection on the advantages and disadvantages along these lines, a strong enthusiasm for this meditation will arise from the depths of your heart. Having seen that, if you familiarize yourself with it, you can generate this attitude. You should meditate on it. The stages of meditation on how to exchange oneself and others. Removing obstacles has 2 parts. 2 points. Removing obstacles and the actual way to meditate. Removing obstacles has 2 points. Identifying the mind of exchanging oneself and others. Removing obstacles to it. So what is called exchanging oneself and others and making oneself into the other and making others into oneself does not mean training in the mind that thinks the other's person is me and his eyes and so forth are my eyes and so forth. Rather, it is to exchange the rank of the two. To switch places. between you and the other, the mind that cherishes oneself and the mind that neglects others, and to generate the mind that cherishes others like we cherish ourselves and neglect others ourselves like we neglect others. That is also why it was taught that one's own happiness and the suffering of others should be exchanged. Having perceived self-cherishing as our enemy, we'll stop making our happiness our priority. Having perceived cherishing others as a positive quality and having stopped neglecting others, neglecting the suffering of others, we will make it priority to eliminate it. In short, we'll act for the sake of eliminating suffering of others without concern for our own happiness. When training in this mind, there are two obstacles. Removing the obstacles of considering oneself and others as distinct individuals. Removing the obstacles of thinking, since the suffering of others does not harm me, I need not make an effort to remove it. So with regard to the first point, the actual topic. Now separating the two, oneself and others, the basis of one's own and others' happiness and suffering, into distinct entities like blue and yellow, you hold them to be established in this way. Then, with respect to the happiness and suffering based on them, you think, since it is mine, it should be accomplished and or removed. Since it is someone else's, it is to be neglected. Therefore, as an antidote to this, think, myself and others are not distinct entities by nature. Rather, as we look at one another, the mind other arises in me, whereas the mind I arises in the other. Thus, it is like the mountain over here and the mountain at the distance. For instance, although from this perspective, the mountain over there arises with respect to the mountain over there. When you go to the mountain over there, the mind, the thought, the mountain over here arises. Therefore, this is not the same as the fact that in whoever looks at the color blue, a mind of just blue will arise, whereas a mind of another color will not arise. The scriptural sources for this, in this manner, compendium of trainings also teaches that self and others are not established by their own entities, but merely posited in dependence on the point of view. Through familiarity with equality of other and self, bodhicitta grows firm. Self and other are relational, as fictitious as that side and this side. So there's an actual way to meditate, and then let's move to Lamrim Chemo. How to adopt the spirit of enlightenment through it. So first we'll have page number 61, Lamrim Chemo, but we'll first do Lamdun, the Kota. So, verse number 6 of Lamb for the Path of Enlightenment. For those excellent living beings who desire supreme enlightenment, I shall explain the perfect methods taught by the spiritual teacher and reinforce an infirm bodhicitta. And then, next verse, number 7, facing patience, statues, and so forth, of the completely enlightened one, reliquaries and excellent teaching, offer flowers, incense, and whatever you have. With number 8, number 9, number 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, having developed the aspiration for enlightenment, constantly enhance it through concerted effort to remember it in this and also in other lives, keep the precepts properly as explained. And next is Bodhicitta, engaged Bodhicitta, taking Bodhisattva vows. Without the vows of the engaged intention, perfect aspiration will not grow. Make effort definitely to take it, since you want the wish for enlightenment to grow. Those who maintain any of the seven kinds of individual liberation vows have the ideal prerequisite for the Bodhisattva vow, not others. The Tathagata spoke of seven kinds of individual liberation vow. The best of these is glorious pure conduct, since said to be the vow of a fully ordained monk, a person. According to the ritual described in the chapter on the discipline in the Bodhisattva stages, take the vow from a good and well-qualified spiritual teacher. Understand that a good spiritual teacher is one skilled in the vow ceremony who lives by the vow and has the confidence and compassion to bestow it. However, in case you try but cannot find such a spiritual teacher, I shall explain another correct procedure for taking the vow. I shall write here very clearly, as explained in the ornament of Manjushri's Buddha Land Sutra, how long ago, when Manjushri was Ambaraja, he aroused the intention to become enlightened. In the presence of the protector, I arouse the intention to gain full enlightenment. I invite all beings as my guests and shall free them from cycling existence. From this moment onwards, until I attain enlightenment, I shall not harbor harmful thoughts, anger, avarice, or envy. I shall cultivate pure conduct, give up wrongdoing and desire, and with joy in the vow of discipline, try myself to follow the Buddha. So these... we finished verse number 31, which ends with the line, and do nothing that is not virtuous. Lamrim Chemo. How to adopt the spirit of enlightenment through its ritual. The great elder said, those who wish to train after they generate the spirit of enlightenment cultivate with effort for a long time the four bases of Brahma, love and so on, thereby by then clear away attachment and jealousy and produce the spirit of enlightenment through the correct ritual. Once you have trained your mind in this way and have firm certainty about developing the spirit of enlightenment, take part in the ritual for adopting it. The explanation of how to adopt the spirit of enlightenment through its ritual has three parts. Attaining that which you have not attained, maintaining and not weakening that what you have attained, and the method of repairing the spirit of enlightenment if you do weaken it. Attaining the spirit of enlightenment which you have not attained has three parts. The person before whom you adopt the spirit of enlightenment, the person to who adopt the spirit of enlightenment, how to take part in the ritual of adopting the spirit of enlightenment. Aside from saying in the person before whom you adopt the bodhicitta, aside from saying in his stages of the activities of the guru, that the person before whom you adopt the spirit of enlightenment should be a master who is qualified, the great elder did not elucidate any further. Our former teachers asserted that it was not sufficient for the person before whom you adopt the spirit of enlightenment just to have the aspirational spirit of enlightenment and to be maintaining its precepts, but he or she must have the vows of the engaged spirit of enlightenment. This accords with Jhatari, who said, Before you have come before a teacher who has the bodhisattva vows, the 10 teaching sutra I mentioned the Shravakas within the context of generating the spirit of enlightenment after others have exhorted some persons to adopt it. These holiness is asking the two persons to hold the lamps alternately. This is said in reference to a person's being exhorted by others to adopt the spirit of enlightenment after Shravakas have encouraged them and created in them a sense of disenchantment with cyclic existence. The Shravakas do not perform the ritual. The persons who adopt the spirit of enlightenment, in general, as Jitari said, the persons who adopt the spirit of enlightenment are sons and daughters of the good lineage who are sound in body and mind. Thus, all deities, Nagas, etc., who are mentally and physically fit for arousing the aspirational spirit of enlightenment are suitable persons for adopting the spirit of enlightenment. Nevertheless, as the commentary on the difficult point of the lamp for the path to enlightenment says, it is this point. They, the person who adopt the spirit of enlightenment, are disgusted with cyclic existence, mindful of death, and have great wisdom and compassion. So the persons who adopt the spirit of enlightenment have trained their minds in the stages of the path explained earlier and have thereby gained some transformative experience with respect to the spirit of enlightenment. How to take part in the ritual of adopting the spirit of enlightenment. The explanation of how to take part in this ritual has three parts. The preparation for the ritual, the actual ritual, the conclusion of the ritual. The first has three sections. Performing the special practice of going for refuge, amassing the collection of merit, purifying your attitude. First has three parts. After decorating the place of ritual and setting up representations of the three jewels, arrange the offerings, supplications, and going for refuge, stating the precepts of refuge. So make neat and purify a place in an area devoid of sinful beings, and there spread about and anoint the area with the five cow products, as well as with marvelous scented waters of sandalwood, etc., and scatter about fragrant cut flowers arranged on high thrones. So in the Sakya tradition, they have the system of taking bodhisattva vows according to the Chittamatra and Madhyamaka philosophical traditions. Arrange on high thrones or small thrones or platform representations of the three jewels that have been cast in metal or made with other materials, volumes of scriptures and the like, and the images of bodhisattvas. Prepare as well as you are able objects of offering such as canopies and the like, as well as flowers and so forth, and also make ready musical instruments, food and ornaments, etc. Then prepare a throne for the teacher and decorate it with flowers. Former teachers say that you should first accumulate merit by venerating and serving community and by giving offering cakes to the spirits. As it says in the Sutra of the Auspicious Aeon, if you have no offerings, you can accomplish this even through offering just the fringe of some cloth. But if you have the resources, you must seek offerings earnestly and without deceit and arrange them in such a way that your friends will be astounded. When some Tibetan teachers asked the great elder to confer the ritual for generating the spirit of enlightenment for Samye and Mangyul, he said that they would not generate it because they had made inferior offerings. He further said that with respect to the presentations, you definitely must have a consecrated image of the Shakyamuni Buddha, the founder of the teaching. And with respect to volumes of scripture, you should have the perfection of Wisdom Sutra as big or bigger than the verse summary of the perfection of wisdom in 8,000 lines. After you have done this, as he explains in his stages of the activities of the guru, you invite the assembly of the noble beings, recite three times the clouds of offering formula, and praise them. Next, The students wash, put on good clothes, and sit with hands joined respectfully. And next topic is supplication and going for refuge. And after that, on page 66, we have the topic. So even though it says, even though there is a request for consideration at each refuge in each of the three jewels and an unusual wording for going for refuge in the teaching, I have written the ritual exactly as Atisha composed it, stating the precepts of refuge is next topic. The master should give here the precepts already explained in the context of the teachings for the person of small capacity. Amassing the collection of merit. And then there's the purifying your attitude, actual ritual. So once you have generated aspirational bodhicitta, and you should actually take a vow or make a pledge that you will not lose it until you have reached enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings. So therefore, some people have a great misunderstanding when they assert the distinction that in the lineage of Nagarjuna, it is proper to give the bodhisattva vow in many rituals, whereas in the lineage of Asanga, it is improper to do so. Furthermore, some say that when the beginners are practicing, they should repeatedly adopt the engaged spirit of enlightenment through its ritual. However, since these beginners do not know the precepts in general and the fundamental transgressions in particular, they cannot demonstrate the particulars of what should then be done, putting them in a very harmful situation. Kamala Shila's first stages of meditation, citing the advice to the King Sutra, says that if you cannot learn the precepts of generosity, etc., you achieve much merit in even a single generation of the Buddhist spirit of enlightenment, and then says, even those who cannot completely learn the perfections should generate the spirit of enlightenment in order to be imbued with method, because there is a great result. So it is very clear that while it is correct to give the ritual for generating the spirit of enlightenment to those who cannot learn the precepts of generosity and etc., it is incorrect to give them the bodhisattva vows. The ritual for adopting the spirit of enlightenment is as follows. Recite the following three times. So even though it is not clear, so after the quotation, Lama Tsongkhapa says, even though it is not made clear that you must repeat this after the master in both this part and the refuge part of the ritual, you must do so. These instructions are the procedure to be followed when a master is present. With respect to how to proceed without the master, the great elder's ritual, a procedure for the spirit of enlightenment and the bodhisattva vow says, although there is no master, there is a ritual for developing the spirit of enlightenment oneself as follows. Imagining the Tathagata Shakyamuni and all the Tathagatas of the 10 directions make obeisance and the ritual of offerings, etc., and then go through the process of going for refuge and so forth as before, eliminating the word master and the supplication to the master. The conclusion of the ritual. The master tells the students the precepts of the aspirational and spirit of enlightenment. Maintaining and not weakening what you have attained. It's chapter 6. You need to know the precepts, so I will explain them. This has two parts. Number one is the training in the precepts that causes you to not to weaken your spirits, your bodhicitta in this lifetime. And then the training in the precepts that causes you not to weaken this bodhicitta in this lifetime has four parts. The training in the precepts to recall the benefits of the spirit in the bodhicitta in order to increase the strength of your enthusiasm for it. The training in the precepts to generate this bodhicitta six times day, each day, in order to increase the actual spirit of enlightenment. And the training in the precepts not to mentally abandon the living beings. For those for whose sake you developed the spirit of enlightenment, the training in the precepts to accumulate the collections of the merit and sublime wisdom. So it says, so if you have this, you also quickly accomplish ordinary spiritual attainments. Wherever you are staying, there will arise no fear, no causes of fear, no famine, and no harm from non-humans, and you'll quell those that have already happened. Also after that, you'll have little trouble, and you'll be naturally healthy in your next life. Even if some harm does arise, it'll not last long or be severe. When you engage in the welfare of living beings, giving teachings, etc., your body will not feel tired. You will not be forgetful, nor will your mind degenerate. So next paragraph. If you are one who abides in the bodhisattva lineage, you naturally have few for dysfunctional tendencies. Dysfunctional, once you have developed the spirit of enlightenment, the dysfunction tendencies of your mind and body are extremely slight. You are patient and gentle, so that if someone harms you, you bear it and do no harm in return. If you see others hurting each other, you are very pleased. You seldom give rise to anger, jealousy, deceitfulness, concealment, and the like. If these do arise, they are not intense, do not last long, and quickly disappear. It is difficult for you to be reborn in miserable realms. Even if you are reborn there, you will quickly get free. Even while there, your suffering will be slight, and because of it, you will be very disenchanted with the cyclic existence and generate compassion for the beings there. If the merit of the spirit of enlightenment were to take form, it would not even fit into the sky, nor does the merit of making material offerings to the Buddha equal even a mere portion of it. The questions of the householder Viradatta Sutra states, if whatever merit there is in the spirit of enlightenment had form, it would fill the entire vault of the sky and then exceed it. Were someone to fill the Buddha's realm with jewels as numerous as the grains of sand of the Ganges and offer this to the protector of the world, far superior is the merit in this offering of one who, joining his or her hands, reverently generates the spirit of enlightenment. There is no limit to the merit in this. While the great elder was circumambulating the Vajra seed in Bodh Gaya, he thought, how can I obtain the full enlightenment quickly? Thereupon he had a vision wherein the smaller statues stood up and asked the larger statues, what should those who wish to quickly attain Buddhahood train in? The larger ones replied, they should train in the spirit of enlightenment. Also in the sky above the main temple, a young woman asked this question to an older woman, and Adisha heard the same answer as before. Therefore, it is said he became more certain about the spirit of enlightenment. Now, accordingly, I understand that the spirit of enlightenment comprises the key points of all the Mahayana's personal instructions, is a great treasure of all the spiritual attainments, is the feature that distinguishes the Mahayana from the Hinayana, and is the excellent basis that spurs you to undertake the greatly effective bodhisattva deeds. Becoming even more fervent about cultivating it, act like a thirsty person hearing talk of water. For when the conquerors and children use these marvelous wisdom to examine the paths in great detail for many eons, they saw just this to be the excellent method of becoming a Buddha. As the engaging in bodhisattva deeds states, reflecting for many eons, the master, the sage, The master of the sages saw this alone to be beneficial. And next, the training in the precepts to regenerate the spirit of the bodhicitta in 6 times a day, each day, in order to increase the actual spirit of enlightenment, or bodhicitta. The training in this has 2 parts, not giving up your development of the aspirational spirit, and the training to increase the aspirational spirit of enlightenment. So regarding the first one, you have taken as your witness the Buddha's, bodhisattvas, and teachers, and in their presence committed yourself to liberate all beings who are not liberated, and so forth. If you then see that living beings are so numerous and their behavior is mean, or that the time wherein you must strive for many eons is long, or that you must train in the 2 collections that are limitless and difficult to do, and you take this as a reason to become discouraged and to abandon your responsibility to develop the spirit of enlightenment, it is a sin greater than a cardinal transgression of the vows of an individual liberation, a monastic. The verse summary of the perfection of wisdom in 8,000 lines states, through your practice, the 10 virtuous actions for 10 million eons, if you then generate the wish to become a Pratyeka Buddha Arhat, you damage and weaken your ethical discipline as a bodhisattva. This breach of the spirit of enlightenment is far more serious than a cardinal transgression. Thus, it says that such a bodhisattva's ethical discipline is faulty. Restraint from Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha concentrations is the bodhisattva's highest ethical discipline. So, were bodhisattvas to weaken this restraint, they would destroy their ethical discipline. For if bodhisattvas do not cast aside such restraint, then even were they to indulge in sensory pleasures, they would not destroy the attitude to restraint that is unique to the bodhisattvas. Again, the verse summary of the perfection of wisdom in 8,009 states, the bodhisattvas and so this is with regard to training and increase the aspirational spirit of enlightenment, under which section there is this verse which we usually say, I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, the teaching, and the community. By the merit of practicing the 6 perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood in order to help living beings. So instead of, when you say, by the merit of practicing, they're using the term merit only as one part of, mentioning only one part of the practice leading to Buddhahood. But if we make it more inclusive, we should use by the collection of the virtuous positive energies, by the collection. So when you take refuge, when you say, I take refuge, you have to bring up in your mind this understanding or insight into the mere conditionality or mere designated nature of this I or yourself. So if you familiarize with this, then whenever you come across the word I, and you will be able to confirm from your experience to yourself that this I actually does not exist the way it appears to. So you have to think about this way of existence of I, that there is no such an independently existing I, and this helps to cultivate the non-objectifying merit or virtues that you would collect. And so when I say this prayer, I do this practice. And the training in the precept not to mentally abandon living beings, for whose sake you have developed the spirit of enlightenment. Although this precept is not found in the pertinent sections of the lamp for the path to enlightenment or ritual procedures for the spirit of enlightenment and the bodhisattva vows, in his commentary on the difficult points of the lamp for the path to enlightenment, Adija says, by caring for and not abandoning living beings, you maintain the spirit of enlightenment for the sake of its object, its benefits, the ritual of generating it, ritual for generating it, its general increase, and not forgetting it. It is listed in this context and does not contradict the intended meaning of the root text, so train in this also. The measure of mentally abandoning living beings is when you produce a thought, now I will never work for this person's welfare based upon some conditions such as an unacceptable action, etc. The training in the preceptor accumulated collections of merit and sublime wisdom. After you have adopted this aspirational bodhicitta through its ritual, strive daily to accumulate the collections, making offerings to the three jewels, etc., in order to increase the spirit bodhicitta. Although I have seen no authoritative sources for this being precept other than former teachers' statement, it is nevertheless very beneficial. The training, next topic, the training in the precepts that cause you to do not separate from your spirit of enlightenment in future lifetimes has two sections. Training in the precepts to eliminate the four dark practices which weaken the spirit of enlightenment, and training in the precepts to adopt the four light practices which keep the spirit of enlightenment from weakening. Regarding the first one, in the Kashyapa chapter of the Ratnakuta collection, there are statements that list the four practices which with respect to not actualizing or forgetting the spirit of enlightenment in future lifetimes, and that this that list the four practices with respect to actualizing and not forgetting the spirit of enlightenment, not casting it aside until you reach enlightenment. They are presented as precepts of the aspirational bodhicitta. The four dark practices are deceiving abbots, masters, gurus, and those worthy of offerings, number one. Number two is making others feel regret about something that is not regrettable. Number three is speaking disparagingly, etc., to beings who have correctly entered the Mahayana. And number four, in an absence of sincerity, using deceit and misrepresentation to get the service of others. So we are on the point three, speaking disparagingly, etc. So the final paragraph on page 77 of Lamrim Chemo, volume 2. I've already discussed briefly the danger of this great offense arising in us. Indeed, if bodhisattvas have even a despising thought toward other bodhisattvas, they have to stay in hell for as many eons as the moments of their thought duration. The thoughts written in the Sutra on the Magic of Final Peace says that no other action apart from slandering another bodhisattva can make a bodhisattva fall into the miserable realms. The verse summary of the Perfect Wisdom in 80,000 lines says, if bodhisattvas who have not received a prediction of their enlightenment have an angry dispute with bodhisattvas who have received a prediction, they must put on the armor of practice again for as many eons as the moments of their coarse, faulty attitude. Thus, it says that they must travel along the path, starting over again for eons commensurate with their angry attitude. They become very far distant from enlightenment. For this reason, stop your anger on all occasions. And if it arises, immediately confess it and strive to restrain yourself. That same text states, developing mindfulness, thinking, this state of mind is not constructive. Confess each instant and restrain yourself from doing it again. Do not rejoice in it. Train in the teaching of the Buddha. So if you have hatred, if you give hatred a chance, the love and compassion you have developed will weaken, and it will be hard to develop any new love and compassion, even if you practice for a long time. Thus, you cut the root of the spirit of enlightenment. If you stop hatred, the unfavorable condition for love and compassion, and the love and compassion, according to the previous explanation, they then progressively increase and eventually become limitless. Dhammakirti's Pramanavartika states, if unharmed by that which it is incompatible, love naturally comes into the mind. And also, as you familiarize yourself with the attitudes of compassion and the like, which increase from the seeds of prior similar experiences, how could these attitudes remain the same? And then point four, in absence of sincerity, using the deceit and misrepresentation to get the service of others. And next is the training in the mind of to adopt the four light practices, which for white practices, which keep the spirit of enlightenment from weakening. One, forsaking consciously lying to any living being whatsoever, even in jest or even for the sake of your life. And number two, not deceiving, but remaining sincere to all living beings. And number three, developing the idea that all bodhisattvas are the teacher. And number four is causing the living beings that you are helping to mature, to not want the modest vehicle, but to adhere to perfect enlightenment. In the point number three, it says, therefore it is said that if you are capable of eliminating the first two faults, as well as the reviling of bodhisattvas, all the harm related to persons mentioned in the compendium training of trainings will be averted. This is based on the concentration that you do not know who is a bodhisattva. So, as stated in the Kashyapa chapter, you should train in the pure perception of all living beings that comes from developing the idea that all beings are the teacher. You should praise bodhisattvas when there are listeners. There are listeners on hand, but you incur no fault if you do not go out into the four directions praising them. This is the remedy for the third dark practice. Regarding the fourth, the object of four light practices is the living beings that you are helping to mature. What you do to them is cause them to not want the modest vehicle, Hinayan, but to adhere to perfect enlightenment. Moreover, from your perspective, it is necessary for them to connect to the Mahayana path. But if your disciples do not develop the intention for it, you incur no fault because you were simply unable to accomplish it. This light practice eliminates the second dark practice, making others feel regret about something that is not regrettable. Because if you want from the depths of your heart for others to set forth towards the culmination of all happiness, you will not do something that brings about unhappiness in others so as to make them feel some regret about their virtuous activity. The sutra requested by a line. Also says, if you cultivate the spirit of enlightenment in all lives and do not abandon it, even in dreams, what is the point of mentioning not abandoning it when you are not sleeping? The Buddha said, cause to enter into enlightenment the beings in villages and cities or in any other place they may dwell. Then you will not relinquish the spirit of enlightenment. Further, the array of qualities in Manjushri's Buddha realm says that if you have these four, destruction of pride, elimination of jealousy, elimination of stinginess, and joy when you see the prosperity of others, you do not relinquish your aspirational bodhicitta. Once you cultivate the spirit of enlightenment, you will not be separated from this precious attitude even in future lives. This is stated clearly in the Cloud of Jewel Sutras of the Ratnakuta collection. If you train the spirit of enlightenment in all activities, and if you preface any cultivation of virtue with the spirit of enlightenment, and in the King of Concentration Sutra says, so in, on page 80 and 81, first Lama Tsongkhapa gives the position of others, and then in paragraph 2 on page 81, with respect to this, if you think, is answering them, I cannot accomplish Buddhahood, you immediately abandon the spirit of enlightenment. It is never necessary to rely on passage of a certain period of time. So such an assertion is absolutely incorrect. The four dark practices are not the cause of relinquishing the spirit of enlightenment in this life, but are causes for not manifesting the spirit of enlightenment in future life. So we should stop them in this life. The lamp for the path to enlightenment says, in order to remember the spirit of enlightenment, even in future lives, maintain the trainings that have been explained. And that have been explained, the that have been explained means, as explained in the Kashyapa chapter, this is what the sutra means, because it clearly says this is the context of the four light practices. Kashyapa, the bodhisattva who possess the four practices, will manifest the spirit of enlightenment in all life immediately after being born, and will not cast it aside or forget it until they reach the heart of enlightenment. So, although it is not stated clearly in the context of the four dark practices whether they affect this life or future lives, understand that it is the latter. Otherwise, if bodhisattvas who are keeping the vows just lie a bit as a joke, deceive others and misrepresent themselves to them in a trifling way, say something slightly bad about bodhisattvas out of anger, or just engender slight regret in others with respect to their cultivation of the virtuous root, and if they pass a period of time without feeling regret, then they would lose their bodhisattva vows. They would lose them because they would have lost the aspirational spirit of enlightenment, and according to both the bodhisattva level and the compendium of trainings, when you lose the aspirational spirit, you lose the vows as well. If you make the assertion that they do lose their vows, then you have to posit these dark practices as fundamental transgressions, yet this is not said anywhere in and is incorrect. Furthermore, reckoning a period of time is based upon the period explained in the questions of Upali Sutra, but since I have proven at length in my basic path to awakening an explanation of the chapter on ethical discipline of the Bodhisattva vows that this is not the meaning of the sutra, I will not explain it again here. To mentally abandon living beings means that when considering them in general, you think, I'm not able to work for the welfare of this many beings. When you abandon them with this thought, so His Holiness commenting on the paragraph 1 on page 83, in general, the great teachers of the lineage descended from the Geshe Thermpa do not recognize this commentary on the commentary refers to the commentary on difficult points of the lamp for the path of enlightenment to be a commentary by the great elder, but the lineages for Nagtso accept this as the elder's composition and also accept it as a teaching hidden by Nagtso. Still, it was well known to earlier scholars that Adisha composed a short commentary while in Purang. It is said that when he thereafter arrived in Samye, a translator asked him if he could add to it, and the translator subsequently expanded it. Therefore, the great elder did compose a short commentary. This is supplemented by a number of explanations which are based on various guru sayings. There are some obvious mistakes, and there are also many good explanations of the meaning of the scriptures. So I have cited it in the stages of the path and elsewhere in the explanation of the points on which it is not mistaken. page 84. Thus, my own position is that, with the exception of the precepts not to relinquish the aspirations bodhicitta and not to mentally abandon living beings, breaking the precepts does not constitute a transgression relative to the spirit of enlightenment until you receive the bodhisattva vows. Nevertheless, if you break the precepts, you break the precepts that comes with your commitment to virtue in the interim before you take the bodhisattva vows. You therefore commit a misdeed and you should make a confession with the four powers. After you receive the bodhisattva vows, breaking these precepts is a transgression that now breaks the precepts which come with these vows. Let's move to the finished with this paragraph, page 84. Move to middle length lamrim. Dira. Marsh. Dirish. The explanation, page 149, explanation of how to assume the mind of the spirit of enlightenment by means of a ritual. The way to assume the mind of enlightenment by means of a ritual has three points. Number one is receiving that which has not yet been received, which has three points, from whom it is taken, by whom the basis that takes it, and how the ritual by which it is taken. The object from whom you take this vow, bodhicitta. The assertions of the earlier masters accord with Master Jatari that it is not enough for the person from whom the vow is taken to possess the vow of the aspiring mind and to be abiding in the trainings. Rather, he must possess the engaging vows and by whom the basis that takes it. All gods, nagas, and so forth, who is physically and mentally suitable to generate the aspiring mind, are also suitable basis for it. The commentary on the difficult points of the lamp for the path says, repulsed by cyclic existence, mindful of death, with wisdom and great compassion. Thus, it should be someone who has gained a little experience of transforming his mind into the mind of enlightenment due to having trained the mind in the stages of the path, as explained before. Then how the ritual by which it is taken has three points, the preparatory ritual, the actual ritual, the concluding ritual. So, the preparatory ritual, the special taking of refuge, under this is special taking of refuge, and decorating the place, displaying representations, and setting up the offering substances. So when Adisha was requested for mind training by Tibetan teachers in Mangyula and Samye, he reportedly said that it did not arise through inferior offerings. He said that also as a representation, a consecrated statue of the main master of the teaching, the founder of the teaching, was imperative, and also as a text, at least a verse summary of the perfection of wisdom of 8,000 lines should be used. Then the assembly of Aryas is invoked. The student, washed and well-dressed with his hands joined, is encouraged by the guru to generate clear faith in the positive qualities of the merit field from the bottom of his heart. He should then slowly say the seven limb prayer, imagining that he is in front of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So let's see. So the paragraph just before the topic stating the trainings of having taken refuge, which says repeat this three times, and ending with composed by the elder. Osta. Mendi pinsir. Muna tene yagda. The title, Making a Request and Taking Refuge. We have finished that. His illness is taking his medicine. Studying the trainings of having taken refuge and accumulating the collections, and the training of the attitude. The actual ritual. In front of a master, the student should kneel down on his right knee, alternatively. Sitting in a cushion, crouching position is also appropriate. With the palms joined, he should generate the mind of enlightenment. The mind of enlightenment here is not a mere mind generation that thinks, I will attain Buddhahood for the welfare of others. Rather, it is the promise that observing the mind that has been generated, the spirit of enlightenment that has been generated, thinks, I shall not give it up as long as I have not attained enlightenment. This is why that attitude should be generated in dependence on a ritual. An exception associated with this is if you are unable to train in the trainings of aspiring mind, you should not make this promise. On the other hand, if the mere thought, I will become a Buddha for the welfare of all sentient beings, is generated by means of a ritual, everyone can do it, regardless of whether or not they are able to train in the trainings of the spirit of enlightenment. It is inappropriate to posit two systems of guarding and not guarding the trainings with respect to the engaging mind of enlightenment. With respect to the aspiring mind, these two systems may be appropriate. However, with respect to taking the engaging mind by means of ritual, it is inappropriate to take it without training in the trainings. Therefore, it is inadmissible to assert that a difference of the appropriateness and inappropriateness should be made with regard to the many rituals for the vow transmitted from Nagarjuna and Asanga. The ritual for assuming the mind of enlightenment. The ritual for assuming the mind is all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas reciting the 10 directions. Please grant me your attention. Master, please grant me your attention. By means of the roots of virtue, of the nature of generosity, the nature of morality, and nature of meditation that I have created, caused to be created, and rejoiced in the creation of it in this life and in previous lives, just as the previous Tathagatas, Arahats, perfectly complete Buddhas and great Bodhisattvas, thoroughly abiding in the great grounds generated in the mind of unsurpassed, perfectly complete enlightenment. In the same way, also I, whose name is such and such, from now until I reach the essence of enlightenment, will generate the mind of unsurpassed, perfect, complete, great enlightenment. I will liberate the beings that are not liberated, free those who are not liberated, give breath to those unable to breathe, and cause those who have not completely passed beyond sorrow to completely pass beyond sorrow. Say this three times. Even though it is not clearly mentioned in the refuge ceremony and in this ritual, it is necessary to so repeat these words after the master. The method for taking the mind of enlightenment by oneself in a ritual. This is the manner of taking the mind of enlightenment in the presence of a master in the elder's mind generation ritual. It says what to do if we cannot find a master. And the concluding ritual, the master should mention the trainings of the aspiring mind to the student, guarding that which has been received without degenerating it, has 2 points. Training in the course of the mind, because of the minds of enlightenment not to degenerate in this life, and training in the course of not being separated from the mind of enlightenment again in the future lives. Training this mind not to degenerate in this life has 4 paths. And training in remembering the advantages so that the strength of one's life in the mind of enlightenment increases. That's 3 points. The way the advantages are explained in scriptures, common causes, and under which there are 2 points, the common causes and showing the advantages, the common causes. You consider the advantages of the mind of enlightenment studying the sutras and hearing them from your gurus, since they have been taught extensively in the array of stock sutras. Sutra, they should be studied. The quotation from it above says, it is the seed of all the Dharma of the Buddha, and all the contact and aspirations of bodhisattvas are summarized in it. Therefore, it is said to be like a brief presentation, although the extensive explanation of the branches is boundless, since the brief presentation contains everything. The brief presentation, like a synthesis of them, teaches a synthesis that summarizes the essential points of all the paths of bodhisattvas. And showing the advantages has two points, the transition, the actual advantages, the transition. And the actual advantages have two points. You become a holy person, holy filled, and you thoroughly hold the merit of non-harm. So you become a holy filled. Becoming holy filled has four points. You become an object of veneration, you become an exalted being, you become a field of merit, and you become a support for the whole world. And you thoroughly hold the merit of non-harm. Thoroughly holding this non-harm has 6 points. The way in which you are guarded by protectors, mantras, and the like will succeed most easily. Famines and the like will not occur. You are without anger and patience. It will be difficult for you to be reborn in lower realms. You will quickly be freed. And how the advantages are immeasurable. And then... And then there are the topics such as training, generating it 6 times, so that the actual mind of enlightenment increases. Training in not giving up the aspiring mind of enlightenment, and training in increasing the aspiring of mind of enlightenment. After that is training in not mentally abandoning any sentient being for whose welfare the mind has been generated. Training and accumulating the merit, accumulating the collections of merit and wisdom, and training, having simply aspiring mind through a ritual, you should strive to accumulate the collections through daily offerings to the three jewels, and so forth, as the cause for increasing the mind for enlightenment. And training in the course of not being separated from the mind of enlightenment again in future lifetimes has 2 points. Training in abandoning the 4 black dharmas that cause it to degenerate, and training in adopting the 4 white dharmas that do not allow it to degenerate. The first has 4 points, deceiving one's abbot. Training in abandoning the 4 black dharmas that cause it to degenerate has 4 points. Deceiving one's abbot, master, guru, or those worthy of offerings. Causing others to regret virtues that they do not regret. Saying something uncomplimentary and the like about a sentient being who has entered the Mahayana, and acting out of deceit and shiftiness, but without the extraordinary attitude. Then the training of in adopting the 4 white dharmas that you do not allow it to degenerate. Has 4 points. Abandoning lying knowingly, abiding with the extraordinary attitude without deceit or shiftiness, generating the discrimination that bodhisattvas are like the teacher and praising them, ripening sentient beings. The object of the first white Dharma is all sentient beings. The action is to abandon lying to them knowingly, even for the sake of one's life or for as little as a joke. If you act in this way, you will be sure not to cheat special objects such as your abbot, master, and so forth through lying. The object of the second white Dharma is also all sentient beings. The action is to abide with an extraordinary attitude towards them without deceit or shiftiness. That is to abide with an honest attitude. It is the antidote to the fourth black Dharma. And the object of the third white Dharma is all bodhisattvas. The action is to generate the discrimination of them as resembling the teacher and to proclaim truthful praise about them in the four directions. So the first Dalai Lama says, feel grateful to all sentient beings and have a pure perception of all religious practitioners and try to overcome the enemy within yourself, the afflictions. And generating the recognition that bodhisattvas are like the teacher and praising them. The object of the third white Dharma is all bodhisattvas. The action is to generate the discrimination of them as resembling the teacher and to proclaim truthful praise about them in the four directions. Sharava said that although we have been creating a little bit of something like virtue, there is no sign of its increase and many signs of its exhaustion. Virtue is exhausted through hatred towards bodhisattvas and our companions, disdain toward them and through insulting them. Therefore, if we are able to abandon insulting them and bodhisattvas, then we will no longer experience what is referred to in the compendium of trainings as harm dependent on persons. Since we do not know in whom the mind of enlightenment is present, we act from the perspective of training and pure appearances to generating the discrimination of all sentient beings as a teacher in God with the Kashyapa chapter. The method for destroying the vows, if it has been degenerated, is finished. And next is the explanation of how to train in the conduct, having generated the mind of enlightenment. How to train in the precepts or the practices. So Zonis is asking, when is the Denshuk, the long life puja? Is it day after tomorrow? Today is the 4th and tomorrow is the 5th. So it's tomorrow. We'll not have very long ritual for the long life offering, puja offering for me. So as we have in the prayer book that is published from the Lamrim Chamo, organizing committee, I have written a prayer which is which I wrote when we offered the crown protrusion and robes to the Buddha statue in Bodh Gaya, and then the 17 praise to the 17 Nalanda masters. So if I prove useful to others and the Dharma, then of course I will receive blessings from these masters and the Buddhas. If I don't prove beneficial, helpful to others, then, of course, there's no point in living long. And so, if we could make our prayers to the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas, these great masters of Nalanda, we should do that for me to live long. And then there are two versions of long life puja, one by Jaran Kenzo Chögyi Lodö, which is short. And then we'll have the prayer for the spread of the all the Buddhist traditions of Tibet. So if all the followers of the Tibetan Buddhist traditions are harmonious, then of course it'll help in me to live long as well. And then we have the ritual for generating bodhicitta, the short one. And then in Drepung, we'll do the ritual, the longer one, which is extracted from the basic path. The Bodhisattva level, the chapter on morality from the Bodhisattva level by Asanga. So as it is said, that the people who have merit will be able to fulfill their aims. So if I could gain merit, then it will help me to live long for the benefit of the Dharma and the sentient beings. And it this similarly in the case of you. So then we'll also have a huge offering. As Master Adisha has said, that when you make offerings, it should be something which actually is beyond the thought or conception of the lay people. So usually when we make talk offering, which is seen as to be distributed to the people, then we actually use all kinds of good ingredients, making it sweet and so forth. But when we make dharma offerings, we are not so careful about the quality of the materials that we use. So we more or less are thinking that in the end, the talk would actually come to us, ourselves. So we'll not have a very extensive ritual, but you should have a very clear visualization and have a good motivation. So I thought this way of doing the long life puja would be good. So it should be meaningful to be good. So, an introduction to the Six Perfections, how to learn the Bodhisattva deeds after developing the spirit of enlightenment, page 85, chapter 7. This has three parts. The reason why you must learn the trainings after developing the spirit of enlightenment and demonstrating that you will not become a Buddha by learning either method or wisdom separately, and explanation of the process of learning the precepts. So I do the generation of bodhicitta every day, and also take bodhisattva vows and tantric vows on a daily basis, but I'm not able to actually integrate them in my day-to-day life thoroughly. So practice means the method of achieving Buddhahood, and that is learning the bodhisattva trainings. Thank you. So this is he's on reading through this stage stanzas from the commentary on Compendium of Valid Cognitions, and the next the paragraph after that. So just as it was said during the reliance on guru section, here also it says, now if they do not first engage in those matters themselves, they will not be able to free others. So ultimately, you have to subdue your own mind and to have a good heart, warm heart, and as best you can. Therefore, if you want to work for others' welfare, you must first discipline yourself. In reference to this, the King of Sutras says that you should take practice to heart. So taking practice to heart doesn't mean reciting mantras or doing some rituals, but it is about, it means or refers to the cultivation of bodhicitta and the understanding of emptiness. So as I said earlier, when you say, I take refuge until I'm enlightened to the Dharma and Sangha, you should think about emptiness by using quotations such as Nagarjuna's Ratnavali saying, a person is neither for six elements, elements of water, earth, and so forth. So whether it's the person who's taking refuge, or the object of refuge, the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, or the action of taking refuge, everything is interdependent, and they are merely designated by name. And so, although, and the conventionality of things must be established, that things are conventionally renowned in convention, and that there is no other convention which actually undermines them, and then the ultimate analysis into the reality of things also does not undermine the conventionality of things. So in this way, these three criteria, these are the three criteria for something to be conventional. So it's very important that it's, as it says here, it's very important that you are not mistaken about what is entailed in taking practice to heart. And next, in demonstrating that you will not become a Buddha by learning either method or wisdom separately. It is not enough just to want to attain Buddhahood. You must engage in the method of achieving it. This is as stated in the stages of meditation. This method has to be unmistaken, because no matter how much you strive on a mistaken path, you will not obtain the result, like milking a horn in the hope of getting milk. Even if the method is unmistaken, if it is not complete in all particulars, striving will not bring the results, just as the absence of seed, water, earth, or the like will preclude the production of a sprout. So the cause must be unmistaken and complete, and must be put into practice sequentially in the right order. Thus, the second stage of meditation says, if you earnestly strive at a mistaken course, even a tremendous effort, amount of time, will not bring you the desired result, like milking a horn. A result does not come from an incomplete causal complex, just as an effect like the production of a sprout does not happen when something like a seed is missing. Therefore, someone who wants the result must depend upon an unmistaken and complete set of causes and conditions. What then is unmistaken and complete cause, a set of causes and conditions? Vairocana's Great Enlightenment Discourse says, so regarding the term jñāna-mitāpa, or thoughtlessness, here Lama Tsongkhapa is rejecting the position of the Hoshang, Chinese Hoshangs, who say that they should stop all thinking whatever. So of course things cannot be found when we seek them in their in themselves. So by using the splinter of diamonds reasoning and the reasoning of one and lack of one and many and so forth, of course, we will not be able to find the things that are conventionally if we seek them through these reasonings. And therefore, it doesn't mean that things do not exist at all when you seek them through these reasonings. And so, in the garland of golden rosary by Lama Tsongkhapa, where he says that things are without elaboration. So when you place your mind or focus on the fact that things do not cannot be found under once you do analysis of them, that is what Lama Tsongkhapa mentions in the Golden Rosary. That is not actual meditation on emptiness, in fact. When I was in Japan once, one student, a school student, asked me, told me that his teacher told him that meditation is just not thinking, placing the mind in thoughtlessness. And is this true or not? So, of course, we need to develop that kind of thoughtlessness, but mere thoughtlessness is not the real meditation that we talk about in Buddhism. We need to develop bodhicitta. And so recently I met some Korean Dharma brothers and sisters, and I told them that we have this Buddha nature. And they told me that if we focus on this Buddha nature that is within ourselves without having to resort to any many varieties of practices, but actually directly touching it, then we will reach Buddhahood directly. So it's very difficult unless you really understand have a very comprehensive understanding of the whole structure of Buddhism. So Hoshin says everything to do with method is not an actual path of the Buddhahood. It's a tremendous denial of the conventional. And since he refutes analyzing with discerning wisdom the selfless reality that is at the heart of the conqueror's teaching, he banishes the system of the ultimate to the far distance. The great Bodhisattva Kamalashila excellently refuted with a mass of scriptural citations, Stinnett's reasoning, this epitome of wrong views in which it is maintained that the sublime path consists of stabilizing the mind in a state that lacks any thought. Such stabilizing of the mind is a practice properly subsumed under the mere category of the meditative serenity, no matter how superior it may be. Kamalashila then wrote at length on the good path pleasing to the conquerors. Nevertheless, there are still many, some who continue to do just what Hoshin did, because the total decline of the Buddha's teaching is drawing near, because the excellent persons who had said it with total certainty through scripture, definitive meaning, and stainless reasoning, all the key points of the path in its entirety are no more, because so, according to the sutra, when we talk within the context of a sutra alone, we say that within the context of sutrayana alone, the special insight is analytical meditation, whereas we cannot say that analytical meditation inside is only analytical meditation, because in the highest yoga tantra, when, of course, the purpose of doing analysis and investigation of things is to gain certainty about the meaning that we are trying to gain insight into. But without analyzing, if we are able to bring the same certitude by just focusing the mind single-pointedly on it, which is possible according to the highest yoga tantra practices, then we do not necessarily need to engage in analytical meditation as such. And therefore, when an analysis actually causes one to distract one's mind, then we do not need to do that. And so you have to see the purpose of doing this kind of meditation. So in the highest yoga tantra, to attain the illusory body or the pure illusory body, and when someone has attained the trainee level union, the practitioners have are beyond the ordinary conceptions that we have, and therefore as an indication of that, they actually are beyond our common experience of what is bad and good and bad. And therefore, we see these great yogis who have reached such a level actually engaging in hunting animals and so forth. So they are beyond the activities which have to actually to do with the movement of gross or coarse level of mind and energy, wind energy within us. So when it comes to the point where the yoga reaches that kind of level, then of course such things certain things are okay, which cannot be judged by ordinary people. So these comments are made in connection with this paragraph, second paragraph on page 88. Nevertheless, there are still some who continue to do just what Hashing did, because the total decline of the Buddha's teaching is drawing near and so forth. So sometimes people are not engaging in study, but they only focus on something called quintessential instruction, which could actually cause one to fall in pitfalls. Others do not accept Hashing's mistaken denial of the factor of method, but assert that this way of understanding a philosophical view is excellent, and still others cast aside discerning wisdom and claim that Hashang's meditation of not thinking is best. So if we are able to make the, within the context of the highest yoga tantra, if you are able to use the actual clear light, then you may be allowed to sit in meditation, single-pointed concentration, in absorption in it, without having to, without the Buddha's needing you to raise you from that meditation. So you have to know the key points of the practices, and it's not enough to have that alone, but you have to have the real experience of such a level of realization. So otherwise we make the grave mistakes of going astray from the path. So the path of these persons is indeed not at all in the direction or vicinity of the meditation on emptiness. But even if you were to allow that it is a meditation on emptiness, you would not get then go on to say that those with the knowledge that comes from their cultivation of a faultless method of meditation after they have found the unmistaken meaning of emptiness should meditate on emptiness alone and not cultivate conventional states of mind pertaining to deeds, or alternatively do not have to strive at those conventional states of mind in a variety of ways, upholding them as at the core practice. To say such things contradicts all the scriptures and completely flies in the face of reason. For the goal for practitioners of the Mahayana is to non-abiding nirvana. For this, you have to achieve non-abiding in cyclic existence via the wisdom that knows reality, the stages of the path contingent upon the ultimate, the profound, the collection of the sublime wisdom, the so-called factor of wisdom. You also have to achieve the non-abiding in the peace that is nirvana via the wisdom that understands the diversity of phenomena, the stages of the path contingent on conventional truth, the vast path, the collection of merit, the so-called factor of method. The teaching of Vimalakirti states these: what is bondage for the bodhisattvas and what is liberation, their liberation. Attachment to wandering through cycling existence without method is bondage for a bodhisattva. Proceeding through cycling existence with method is liberation. Attachment to wandering through cycling existence without wisdom is bondage for the bodhisattva. Proceeding through cycling existence with wisdom is liberation. Wisdom that is not imbued with method is bondage. Wisdom imbued with method is liberation. Method not imbued with wisdom is bondage. Method imbued with wisdom is liberation. Therefore, when you are on the path, right from the time of wanting the goal of Buddhahood, you must depend on both method and wisdom. You will not attain it by either one alone. The foremost of Gaya says, if you summarize the paths of bodhisattvas, there are these two. Which two? Method and wisdom. And the glorious first and foremost Tantra states, the perfection of wisdom is the mother. Skill in means is the father. And Kashyapa chapter also says, Kashyapa, it is like this. Just as kings informed by ministers perform all royal duties, so too the wisdom of bodhisattvas imbued with skill and means performs all the deeds of a Buddha. Therefore, meditate on emptiness that has the supremacy of being associated with all aspects. That is an emptiness that is complete in all the facets of method, generosity, and so forth. By meditating on emptiness in isolation, you will never reach the Mahayana path. The questions of Crest Jewel Sutra states this at length. And then the sublime continuum comments on this passage as follows. Generosity, ethical discipline, patience, and so forth, these are the painters. Emptiness supreme in all aspects is said to be the likeness. This uses the analogy of assembling a group of artists to paint a king's likeness. One knows how to paint a head, but not something else. One knows how to paint a hand, but not something else, and so on. If even one artist is missing, the painting will not get finished. The king's likeness is analogous to emptiness, and the painters are analogous to generosity and so forth. So if method, generosity and so forth is incomplete, it would be like a decapitated or amputated likeness. Furthermore, to take emptiness in isolation as what is to be meditated on and say, there is no need to cultivate anything else, expresses an idea that the Bhagwan set forth as a view to be opposed, and he thereupon refuted it. Were that statement true, then the many eons of a bodhisattva's practice of generosity, observance of ethical discipline, etc., would be an exercise in faulty wisdom that did not comprehend the definitive, as the Bhagwan says in the sutra, gathering all the threats. Maitreya, Fools intending to repudiate the other perfections will speak thus about the bodhisattva's correct practice of the six perfections for the sake of the perfect enlightenment. Bodhisattvas should train in perfect wisdom alone. The remaining perfections have no use. Ajita, what do you think? Was he who was the king of Kashi exercising faulty wisdom when he gave his own flesh to the hawk for the sake of the pigeon? Maitreya replied, no, Bhagwan, he was not. The Bhagwan continued, Maitreya, when I was performing the deeds of the Bodhisattva, did the roots of virtue that I accumulated, the roots of virtue that go with the six perfections, harm me? Maitreya replied, no, Bhagwan, they did not. The Bhagwan continued, Ajita, you have so far practiced the perfection of generosity over 60 eons. You have practiced the perfection of ethical discipline over 60 eons. You have the perfect patience over 60 eons, the perfect joy, perseverance over 60 eons, the perfect meditative stabilization over 60 eons, and the perfection of wisdom over 60 eons, in regard to which these fools will say that enlightenment is only reached through a single way, the way of emptiness. Their deeds will be completely impure. Therefore, to say it is unnecessary for someone who knows emptiness to strive hard to cultivate method is a mistaken denial that states, in effect, the period of our teacher's previous holy lifetimes was a time when he had no understanding of the definitive. An opponent's position, practicing the deeds of generosity and so forth in a variety of ways, is for when you do not have a firm knowledge of emptiness. When you do have this firm knowledge, then this is enough. This is a reply. This is a very wrong view. If it were correct, then the children of the conquerors who have ascended to the great levels where they have attained the non-conceptual sublime wisdom that receives the ultimate truth, and in particular the eighth level bodhisattva who have control over non-conceptual wisdom, would not need the bodhisattva deeds. This is incorrect because Sutra on the 10 levels says that even though on each of the 10 levels there is an emptiness, emphasis on one of the deeds, generosity, etc., it is not the case that they do not perform the other deeds. So it is said that they practice all 6 or 10 perfections on each level. Further, since Ajita, Nagarjuna, Asanga, and Asanga explained the meaning of these sutras in this fashion, it is not possible to interpret them otherwise. In particular, the Bodhisattva eliminates all the afflictions on the eighth level. Therefore, when they stabilize on the ultimate, wherein they have quelled all elaboration, the Buddhas exhort them, explaining that they have to train in the Bodhisattva deeds. With just this knowledge of emptiness, you cannot become enlightened, because the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas have also obtained this non-conceptuality. Look at my immeasurable body, immeasurable sublime wisdom, immeasurable realm, and so forth. You also do not have my powers, and so on. Joyous effort, joyously persevere for the sake of these attributes. Think about the living beings not at peace, disturbed by various afflictions, but do not discard this forbearance, meditation on emptiness, and so forth. To be satisfied with a certain trivial meditative concentration and to set aside everything else is something ridiculed by scholars. And then there's quotation from the sutra on the 10 levels. So page 94. For instance, at the start of the meditation session, if you first generate a very strong spirit of enlightenment, this spirit of enlightenment is not manifestly there when you then enter meditative equipoise in concentration on emptiness. Yet this does not preclude this concentration's being imbued with the potency of the spirit of enlightenment. It is this sort of thing that is referred to by the term non-apprehending generosity. It is not the complete absence of a generous attitude wherein giving is not feasible. Under the remaining perfections, understand the remaining perfections in a similar way. Know also that this is how method and wisdom are inseparable. Furthermore, you should not misconstrue statements that things in cyclic existence, such as your body, resources, and its long lifespan, are the result of collections of merit. They are so only in the absence of skill in means and wisdom. When collections of merit are imbued with these, it is entirely proper that they are the causes of liberation and omniscience. There are limitless passages in the scriptures which say as much, such as this one from the precious garland. To sum up, the embodiment of form, O King, is born from the collection of merit. Moreover, it looks like you are saying that even all ill deeds and afflictions have that cause the miserable realms can sometimes become causes of Buddhahood, and that virtue, generosity, ethical discipline, and so forth cause cycling existence but does not become a cause of Buddhahood. So compose yourself before you speak. Do not misconstrue the following statement from the sutras. Adhering to the six perfections, generosity, and so forth, is demonic activity. From the Three Heap Sutra, says, confess each of these, descending to the level of objective existence and giving gifts, observing ethical discipline because of a belief in the supremacy of ethics, etc. And from the sutra requested by Brahma, it says, all analysis is conceptual thought. The non-conceptual is enlightenment. The meaning of the first passage is that generosity, etc., motivated by a mistaken adherence to the two types of self, self of a person and of objects, is not pure and therefore is stated to be demonic activity. This passage does not teach that generosity and so forth is demonic activity. Otherwise, since it mentions all six perfections, you would also have to assert that the perfections of meditative civilization and wisdom are demonic activities. The second scriptural passage means that the perfections are impure because of being motivated by mistaken adherence and explains that you must confess them. It does not teach that you should not be involved in generosity, etc. Otherwise, the mention of a descent to the level of objective existence in the phrase descending to the level of objective existence and giving gifts would be unnecessary, and it would instead have stated confess the giving of gifts in general, which it does not in fact say. This method of response formulated in the third stages of meditation emphasizes an extremely important point, because Hoshang's view misunderstands this passage and asserts that the whole range of deeds is qualified by signs, wherein the deeds are taken to be the apprehension of signs of a self, of persons and objects. If every sort of virtuous conceptual thought, such as generous attitude when thinking I shall give this thing, and the attitude of restraint when thinking I shall restrain from this doing, wrongdoing, were an apprehension of a self of objects that can misconceive the three spheres, agent, object, and the recipient, then it would be right to it would be right and proper that everyone finds the view of selflessness of objects should completely reject the virtuous conceptual thought, just as they reject hostility, pride, etc. It would be quite wrong for them to purposefully cultivate those virtues. So Solon is quoted Lama Tsongkhapa for in his praise of the Buddha for teaching dependent origination. Because things are dependently originated, we will not be swayed by the extremes. Page 97. Therefore, since there is no time when it is not necessary to practice these deeds, the six perfections, etc., until you become a Buddha, it is incumbent upon you to train in these deeds. If you strive right now from the depth of your heart, you will accomplish with effort what you can achieve with respect to the practices that you are unable to do for the time being. Make an aspiration to do them and ask causes of the ability to practice them. Accumulate the collections, clear away the obscurations, and make many aspirational prayers. Once you do this, it will not be long before you put them into practice. Otherwise, if you take the position that you personally cannot understand the deeds and cannot do them, and you then say to others, you do not need to train in them, not only do you ruin yourself and bring ruin to others on others as well, but it also becomes a condition for the decline of the teaching. So do not do this, as Nagarjuna's Compendium of Sutras is discerning even the non-composite and still being disillusioned with composite. Virtue is demonic activity, understanding even the path to enlightenment and still not seeking the path of the perfections is demonic activity. And also a bodhisattva who lacks skill and means should not strive for the state of profound reality. And then there's the quotation from the sutra of showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret, after which it says, you must distinguish between explanations of how there is no observed object and explanations of how there is an observed object. Accordingly, while you must loosen the bonds of afflictions and the conceptions of signs of true existence, you must be firmly bound by the rope of ethical training. And while you need to eradicate both kinds of misdeeds, deeds that are wrong by nature and deeds that are wrong by prohibition, you must not eradicate virtuous activities. Being bound by ethical training and being bound by conceiving signs of true existence are not the same. They're loosening. And loosening the safeguarding of vows and loosening the chain of the conception of self are not the same either. You achieve omniscience from the number of causes, each of which is insufficient by itself. So know that the following sort of person is a teacher of non-virtue who blocks the door to the two collections. Someone who says hundreds of birds are driven out with a single stone from a slingshot and who attains fortunate life of leisure and should then take advantage of it in many ways, but rather does not train in anything other than one specific aspect of it. Page 99. This training method and wisdom comprising the six perfections is, as explained earlier, common to both the mantra and perfection vehicles. For in many of the tantric classes, we find repeated mention of the complete path of the perfections, the six perfections, etc., in the context of explanations that the entire celestial mansion and the array of resident deities are the inner qualities of mind. And therefore, intelligent ones generate a solid certainty about this path of method and wisdom and in many ways continuously grow in your natural capacity for the supreme vehicle.
Back to the middle emblem ring, we're on the page number 160. Explanation of how to train in the contact having generated the mind of enlightenment. Having generated a mind, we enlighten how to train in the quantum. This is 3 points. The reason why it is necessary to train in the trainings have generated a mind of enlightenment. Even if you do not train in the trainings of generosity and so forth, after generating the mind of enlightenment in this manner, it will still be of great benefit according to the above condition from the life of Maitreya. However, if you do not make the Bodhisattva trainings your essential practice, it will be impossible to become a Buddha. Therefore, you should train in the contrary. In the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra, it says, one should make it the essential practice. Why? Because, O youthful one, for one who makes it this essential practice, it will not be difficult to obtain unsurpassed perfectly complete enlightenment. Also, Kamala Shila says in the stage of meditation, a Bodhisattva who has generated the mind understands that he cannot tame others without taming himself and thoroughly applies himself to the practice of generosity and so forth. Without them, he cannot achieve enlightenment. We must be accomplished once the vow has been taken is training and those very trainings associated with it. Demonstration that Buddhahood is not achieved by training and method or wisdom alone. This is 2 points. In the stages of meditation, it says, one who engages in the method for accomplishing Buddhahood needs an unmistaken method. For however hard you try, an unmistaken path will not bring about the desired result. Just like pulling a cow by its horn if you want milk, if all do it fondless, it is incomplete. The result will become after despite your effort, just as a sprout will not grow if either the seed, water, earth, or the like are incomplete. Well, then what are the complete and unmistaken causes and conditions? In Virtue as manifested enlightenment, it says, O Lord of secrets, the exalted wisdom of omniscience arises from the root that is compassion. It arises from the cause that is the mind of enlightenment. It is culminated by a method. In this regard, compassion has already been explained. The mind of enlightenment is two: the conventional mind of enlightenment and the ultimate mind of enlightenment. Method is thoroughly complete generosity and so forth. This was explained by the great trailblazer Kamala Shila. Page number 162. Refutation of wrong conceptions about this. A wrong modes of apprehension. One such mystic conception regarding the path is offered by the Chinese Hashang and others who say, as long as there are discursive thoughts, no need to talk about it if they are bad conceptions. But even if they are good conceptions, they bind us in cyclic existence. Therefore, their effects do not transcend the cyclic existence, just as one can be existence. Therefore, just as one can be bound with fetters of gold or robes, as just as both white and black clouds obscure the sky, and just as pain is produced regardless of whether one is beaten by a white or a black dog. That is why just equipoise without conceptions about anything is the path to Buddhahood. Generosity, ethics, and so forth were taught for the sake of foolish beings incapable of meditating on this definitive meaning. Therefore, having found the definitive meaning, to engage in this conduct is like a king become a commoner, or like having found the elephant looking for his footprints. Hashang substantiates his position by quoting 80 passages from sutras that praise non-conceptuality. His statement that all the factors of method are not genuine but the Buddhahood is an enormous depreciation, and by refuting engagement in the essence of the victor's teaching, selflessness, with the wisdom of individual investigation, it abandons the mode of highest meaning, erring far away from it. Although Kamala Shila has refuted it well with the stainless scriptural passages and reasonings, and although he has presented it in detail, the good part that pleases the victors, there are still some who scorn the sight of the contact, such as guarding and restraining, and who discard them while cultivating the body. Acting has been described above. It appears that some, apart from deprecating the mind of method, discard the way of understanding the view, while others discard the search for the view of suchness by means of the wisdom of individual investigation, and then skillfully assert the Chinese medication of not thinking about anything. This does not occur on the side of meditation on emptiness either. However, even if it were admitted as meditation on emptiness, the statement, those who meditate well on the meaning of emptiness should meditate on emptiness alone and need not cultivate the consciousness of conventionalities, the side of contract contradicts all the scriptures of the Buddha and simply seem to go beyond the path of reasoning. The object to be achieved By Mahayanist is non-abiding nirvana with respect to their non-abiding in the stages of path of relying on the ultimate abide, the profound, and what is called the collection of the exalted wisdom and the factor of wisdom, whereas non-abiding in nirvana or peace is necessarily achieved through what is called the wisdom cognizing varieties, the stages of the path of relying on conventional truth, the truth of the past, the collection of method and the factor of merit. The following words are taken from the Sutra showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secrets. The collection of exalted wisdom is what abandons all mental afflictions. The collection of the merit is what fully nurtures all sentient beings. Bhagavan, since this is so, the mad Bodhisattva Mahasattva strive for the collection of merit and excess wisdom. So here some present which are not evident in Lamrim Chemo, or the great truths of stage of path to enlightenment. As I have explained before, according to the highest yoga tantra, when one has the highest source, highest secret meditation, so even the insightful wisdom is also analytical wisdom. And similarly, the Manjushri give the Manjushri give vision and teaching to Sajjan Kongkhan Nyingpo and taught him. So, teaches about the analytical meditation, about the insightful wisdom. So, it is possible that there may be a way to explain it through both ways. But according to the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, or the Sutrayana, even before understanding the reality nature of the emptiness, first the object to which the emptiness to be understood has to be understood first. And according to Tantra, first the important is to think about the gross or the rough level of the mental mind which has to be averted first in order to gain the subtle kind of mind. So it is highly emphasized here. Page number 165. In particular, on the occasion of eighth ground, when the Bodhisattva abides on the ultimate and all elaborations are pacified owing to the exhaustion of all mental afflictions, the Buddhas exhort him, saying, Buddhahood cannot be achieved through this mere realization of emptiness. This realization is achieved even by hearers and solitary realizers. My bodies, my exalted wisdom, my Buddha fields, and so forth are immeasurable. Look at them, not you have my powers and the like. Therefore, set about it with joyous effort. Think of the unpacified sentient beings agitated by various mental afflictions. Do not give up patience either. If the Buddhas are so empathetic in explaining to eight ground bodhisattvas the need to train in bodhisattva contact, this obviously applies even more to others. Although in the context of high paths of unsurpassed mantra, there are indeed differences in this regard. It was already explained above that in general the two, the mantra and the preparation vehicles, are the same by and large in sharing the structure of the path of generating the two minds of enlightenment and training in the six perfections. We do not assert that generosity and so forth are unnecessary, but they are complete when you do not think about anything, because by not adhering to the recipient, the act of giving, nor the substance given, non-observing generosity is complete, and likewise the remaining perfections are complete, and because it says in the sutras that six perfections are contained in each one of them. This is 3 points, refuting that with a digression. If all the perfections were complete simply through this, they would also be complete in the calm abiding of Tirthika's single-pointed mind at the time of meditative equipoise, since he does not adhere to them. In particular, as it says in the Sutra on the Ten Grounds, hearers and solitary realizers who have a non-conceptual exalted wisdom with respect to the reality will become Mayanists during meditative equipoise only, because the entire Bodhisattva contact will be incomplete. If you assert that this alone is sufficient because it is taught that in each perfection all six are included, then while offering a mantala with the verse giving cow dung together with water, it will also be appropriate to do just that, since it is that all six are present. The following analogy is given in order to illustrate the contact conjoined with the view and wisdom conjoined with the method. When a mother, tormented by sorrow at the death of her beloved child, engages in conversations with other people and the like, due to the power of her sorrow, she does not give it up. No matter what minds arises, yet not all her minds are minds of sorrow. Similarly, if the wisdom realizing emptiness is very powerful, the minds that observe your making gifts, prostrations, circumambulations, and so forth do not realize emptiness, but it is not contradictory that they offer it possessing the power of that wisdom. If you start off with the intense power of the mind of enlightenment as you do at the beginning of a meditative session, although the mind of enlightenment is not manifest during the meditative stabilization of emptiness, that does not contradict its being influenced by it. The way in which wisdom and method are not separate is also like that. Demonstration of contradiction in others' assertions. This is 6 points. It is incorrect that the causes for higher status in certain goodnesses are contradictory. You should not be misled with regard to the statement that the results of the collection of merit are your present body, resources, long life, and so forth of the cyclic existence. If method is divorced from wisdom, this is indeed the case. However, if it is conjoined with it, it is altogether suitable to be the cause of liberation and omniscience. There are infinite scriptural passages for this, like Nagarjuna's precious garland. The form body, in brief, your highness, is born from the collection of merit. Moreover, sometimes you expound that the faulty contact and all the mental afflictions that become the causes of the lower realms can also become causes of the Buddhahood, and sometimes you seem to say that virtues like generosity, ethics, and so forth that become the causes of high status are causes of cyclic existence rather than the causes of enlightenment. You should set your mind at ease before taking. This is 3 points. It also says in the sutras, so strong adherence to the six, generosity and so forth, is the action of Mara. In the Three Heaps Sutra, it also explains giving gifts, falling into observing, guarding one's ethics, considering them supreme ethics, and so forth. This should be confessed individually. Also from the sutra requested by Brahma, however much contact exists, all of it is conceptual. Thorough non-conceptuality is enlightenment. You should not be mistaken with respect to these statements. The meaning of the first is that generosity motivated by mistaken adherence to the two selves is explained as an action of Mara, since it is impure. However, generosity and so forth are not presented as the actions of Mara. Otherwise, you will have to say, giving gifts should be confessed in general without the need to fall into observing, saying, bestowing gifts having fallen into observing. Therefore, it follows that it has not been taught in this manner. In stages of meditation, it becomes a very crucial point for Kamaleshita to give this kind of answer, for if you misunderstand this, you will apprehend signs of a self or persons or phenomena and assert the entire state of contact to be connected with. So I will end here. By the merits I have accumulated by teachings, may the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa be spread to all far of the place. Mantle offering. Pagal. Pagal onje. The prayers of the stages of path, by accumulating through long effort the two collections of wisdom and merit as vast as the sky, may I be become the chief of the concourse to guide all sentient beings who are blinded by ignorance. Also, in all lives until I reach that point, may Manjushri look after me. After I find the supreme point, completing the stages of the teaching by accomplishing it, may I please the concurrence by stealing. In regions where the supreme precious teaching has not spread, or where it has spread but declined, may I illuminate the treasure of happiness and benefits with a mind deeply moved by great compassion. With these treasures on the stages of path to enlightenment, well founded on wondrous streets of concurrence and their children, bring glory to the mind of those who want to be free, and long preserve the concurrence attachment, and for all who provided conditions that support integration of the good path, and clear away conditions that inherit that integration, whether they are humans or not, may they never be separated in all their lifetimes. From the pure, authentic path praised by the concurrence, when I strive to properly achieve the supreme vehicle through the 10 deeds of the teaching, may I be accompanied always by those who have power. And may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions. The prayer of the words of truth. Namo Ratna Trayaya, homage to the Triple Gems, magnificent masters of an ocean of limitless good qualities. Those gone to the bliss of the three realms, your children and disciples, looking after the magnificent Michael like your own child, please pay attention to my true words of sorrow. Expand the doctrine of the completely perfect capable one, which removes the sufferings of cyclic existence and solitary peace. For abundant, extensive welfare and happiness in Jambudeva, increase the 10 kinds of Dharma content of all those learned and accomplished holders of the doctrine. By pacifying all the unbearable dangers of sickness, weapons, and fine mind, cause those migrators totally compelled by intolerant strong karma, stricken by the torture of sufferings without respite, to recover their breath in an ocean of happiness and joy. Particularly for all the migratory beings in the religious snowland, oppressed with evil actions by the barbarian hordes from the black side, devoid of love, and may your power of compassion arise and quickly stop the flow of blood and tears. May all the unruly groups of people, maddened by the demon of afflicted emotions, who by their rough behavior ruin themselves and others, fully obtain the eye which sees the object of compassion and obtain magnificent life, kindness, and affection. The wish that since long time dwells in our heart is the glorious, complete freedom for the entire Tibetan country. Bestow soon the fortune to enjoy the celebration of spontaneous religion is secular harmony. All the people who completely give up their cherished body, life, and possessions and endurance hundreds of hardship for the sake of the doctrine, its holders, their country, and for the compatriots, may they be guarded by the compassion of the protector of Bodhala. In short, may the good fruit of an extreme prayer to fully protect the land of snows, made by the powerful protector cherished in the presence of Buddhas and their children, appear soon here and now. By the interdependence of the profound suchness of appearance and emptiness, by the power of three sublimes, compassion and the force of true words, by the power of the truth of the infallible action and result, may a prayer of truth be fulfilled soon and without obstacles. May the teachings of Buddha spread to all parts of the world, and great masters who uphold the Buddha's teachings have a long life, and may the teachings of Buddha, the scriptural teachings and attainments all spread to all parts of the world.
Chosun den besenen şükür.